is 9 o'clock. Welcome to the November 17th, 2021 Board of Directors meetings for the Eastern Municipal Water District. We always begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Slauson, would you like to lead us this morning in the pledge?
Sir, please stand, face flag, and follow me in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have anybody who has filled out a card for public comment this morning?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. We will then move to item two on our agenda, which is our recognitions. And I believe is Alan here. Alan, very good. Good morning.
This meeting is being recorded and or transcribed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, President Pauley and members of the board. It is a pleasure to acknowledge the completion of our 22nd round of the Youth Ecology Corps program. The Youth Ecology Corps program was started back in 2013, and over the last 8 years, more than 200 young adults have successfully completed the 12-week program. Of the program participants, we are excited to say that 28 have been asked to come back for a second cohort, giving them 6 months of work experience. Of those, 9 have been brought back as temporary employees, giving them 1 year of work experience. And as of today, 2 interns have been hired on as full-time employees. So this program is sponsored by the Riverside County Workforce Development Board and California Family Life Center. I'd like to introduce representatives from the California Family Life Center that are here with us today. So we have Executive Director Mary Jo Ramirez.
Welcome.
We also have Program Administrator Lenore De Jesus. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Greg Snow is our Program Coordinator. And we also have Rafaela Palosos, who is our Career Navigator. Thank you. So at this time, if I could have President Pauley and General Manager Jim Watts stay up front, we'll go ahead and have our interns come up. So first off, we have Monoje J.J. McCorley. She is one of our interns, and she's been working in our engineering services, for engineering services assistant. This is your first cohort. Congratulations. Here's your certificate. Good job. Go ahead and stand up. Right. So next up, we have Vanessa Meza. Vanessa has been in our records management department, working as a records management assistant. This is her second cohort with us, giving her 6 months of work experience. And we've offered her a third cohort that will last for 6 months, so she'll have a total of 12 months here with us. Congratulations. So in closing, I would like to thank, of course, our EMWD supervisors who are actively involved in the Youth Ecology Corps program. Without them, we couldn't do this program. Our general manager, Joe Mawad, and, of course, our entire board for your continued support of the Youth Ecology Corps program. Thank you so much.
Alan, before you go, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
First of all, I this is probably one of a fantastic program we do here at Eastern. Remind me how many people from Youth Ecology that we've had the opportunity to hire.
So we've, as of today, we've hired 2. Eric Morales, who is our laboratory scientist, and Jennifer Rith, who's in our records management department.
But as we look and find new people that are going to be the future of EMWD, this is one of the programs that does it. So it's something I know the board is very proud of, and I just want to thank you for doing an outstanding job of guiding this program for the districts.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We will then move on to our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. I wanted to start off as a reminder. I'm pleased to report to the board that today, in fact, is our inaugural meeting whereby we are webcasting, video streaming the board meeting online, and the video will also be recorded and posted on our website. So really pleased that we were able to complete that effort. Under new and ongoing items, as you're aware, last week the Metropolitan Board of Directors adopted a resolution declaring a regional drought emergency in light of the increasing severity of the drought conditions in the state and in recognition that 2020 and 2021 were the driest two consecutive years on record within the state. This action is intended to help stretch the extremely limited state water project supplies. Unless and until water supply conditions substantially improve, the Department of Water Resources does not expect to allocate any Table A supplies, which essentially equates to 0% allocation starting 2022. By reducing the use of state water project supplies now, more time can be gained for additional storms to develop that could reduce the likelihood of more severe water demand reductions in the future. The Metropolitan resolution that was adopted last week calls upon member agencies to take all reasonable measures to reduce dependence on state water project supplies and to implement appropriate voluntary and mandatory drought actions from each agency's water shortage contingency plans. The resolution also directs the Metropolitan General Manager to develop a unified regional message to communicate the status of the regional drought emergency, expand conservation programs, seek external funding to accelerate conservation and supply programs, and expand investments to ensure all portions of the Metropolitan Service Area attain a high level of reliability during a multi-year drought conditions. In response to Metropolitan's actions last week, staff will be bringing forward later this morning a recommendation to implement Stage 3A of EMWD's Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Next item on my report, I wanted to share with you that last week, EMWD and Metropolitan staff, as well as President Pauly and Director Corona, held a conference call with the Kawean Indian Tribe and their legal representative to further discuss providing municipal water service to the tribe. As part of the groundwater litigation settlement that is anticipated early next year, the tribe is seeking federal government project funding for facilities, annexation cost, as well as other program cost, to ultimately deliver 5,000 acre-feet of imported water supply per year that is needed to augment the tribe's groundwater supplies. The tribe is proposing municipal water service to be provided to the reservation via a 22-mile pipeline within Caltrans right-of-way adjacent to Highway 79 and 371 from Eastern's EM-21 turnout with Metropolitan. Multiple booster stations, I believe they mentioned up to six booster stations, would be necessary to lift that water from our turnout to the reservation elevation at 4,000 feet. The meeting focused primarily on determining the requirements and extent of on-reservation as well as off-site annexation, acreage, and cost, and the appropriate lead agency for the CEQA process. Additional information was requested by EMWD as well as Metropolitan staff, and we will review that information once it's received. And we will continue to update this board on further developments regarding this initiative accordingly. Next item under my report is the COVID-19 OSHA regulations. As you're aware, in September, the President's executive order mandated COVID-19 vaccines for all federal employees and directed federal OSHA to develop a rule requiring all employers with 100 or more employees to ensure their workforce is fully vaccinated and implement criteria for workers who remain unvaccinated to produce a negative test result on a weekly basis. Earlier this month, federal OSHA released rules which provide the option for employers not to mandate vaccinations if they implement criteria for weekly testing. As a reminder, Eastern is regulated by Cal OSHA, and Cal OSHA has yet to release its COVID-19 vaccination regulation. The Cal OSHA regulations are expected to be similar to the requirements shared by federal OSHA. As a result, EMWD's management is evaluating several possible options for compliance with the expected regulation, including the possible cost and/or work time impacts. An additional consideration is that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit granted a motion to stay pending review federal OSHA's COVID-19 testing and emergency temporary standards. The court ordered that federal OSHA take no steps to implement or enforce the emergency temporary standards until further court orders. Yesterday, we were notified by Cal OSHA that they have delayed consideration of the COVID-19 vaccination regulations until further information on the U.S. Court of Appeals litigation develops. Having said all that, once Cal OSHA releases the regulations, we will work diligently with the union leadership on ways to implement processes which meet legal requirements and minimize disruption to our workforce and operations. Today, in closed session, we will share information with the board regarding available compliance approaches. Under items of interest to the board, I am pleased to share with you that I have been selected to serve on the National Water Reuse Association Board of Directors. As the board is aware, EMWD's former general manager, Mr. Paul Jones, had served on the National Water Reuse Board, and I'm very pleased that I can continue EMWD's representation on the board to support and assist water reuse in its mission to advocate and promote policies, programs, and funding in support of recycled water beneficial use throughout the country. My participation will involve a commitment of attending quarterly board meetings with water reuse. Finally, I just wanted to mention that last week I had an opportunity to meet with the general manager of the Municipal Water District of Orange County, Mr. Rob Hunter. We had an opportunity to discuss various issues of common interest, including the current drought conditions and water supply outlook for the region, as well as the Colorado River and State Water Project. It was an opportunity to share perspectives on a multitude of issues facing our region. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
I have one question.
Yes.
Did Cal OSHA give an indication that they believed that whatever the court findings were in the federal level might apply at the state level?
It's a great question, Director Slauson. So historically, Cal OSHA has followed federal OSHA requirements. They had on an agenda for a meeting tomorrow to discuss the guidelines, and we were notified this week that they decided to defer the discussion given the U.S. Court of Appeals decision. So I think they've decided to, at this time, hold off on any further consideration until they see how the court appeal process advances. But historically speaking, Cal OSHA has followed federal OSHA guidelines.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Armstrong?
Well, first, congratulations on your appointment. I think it's great that Eastern is involved in playing a leadership role in the Water Reuse Association. I think it's really important, so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Question I have is on the COWIA pipeline, mm-hmm. do you foresee either an opportunity or a benefit to that line potentially being partnering with them and upsizing it to provide any additional water supply to, I don't know if it comes close to our service area up in that?
It's a great question, Dr. Armstrong. In fact, that issue did come up during the discussion that was held in terms of who would own and operate the infrastructure, the pipeline as well as the booster stations. And currently the tribe has indicated they would prefer to own and operate that system, which is somewhat inconsistent with our experience in terms of working with other tribes like Pechanga, who own and operate the system within their reservation, but not within public right away. So I believe that the tribe feels that they need to own and operate because of the federal funding that may be involved in construction. So we need to look into that further. I brought up the issue that I think you're raising, which is long-term, if that infrastructure is there, someone will ultimately approach us or the tribe wanting to connect, wanting service. So we want to make certain that we are looking forward to not just the next few years, but for the next few decades, given that area may have interest in development. So we are going to have that discussion with the tribe as well as their attorneys and, frankly, with Metropolitan. Ultimately, there may be a requirement to annex that alignment along the highway into EMWD, in addition to the benefiting acreage within the reservation. So those are the issues that we're trying to address, but to your point, that issue did come up during the conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for the general manager?
I was just going to say, you've got to remember, too, that that's a raw water line. That's not a potable line that's going up there. So they're going to have to figure a way to clean that water up. They want to use it.
Great. Thank you very much, Joe.
Great. Thank you.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing today.
All right. Nick?
Nothing today.
Linaya?
I'll continue that. Nothing today.
Matt, are you going to break the chain here? Or?
I was going to say, why break the streak? No, I don't have any updates today.
Very, very good. That will move us to our consent calendars. Any members of the Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I'd like to just pull item D for just for a separate vote.
Very good. We will pull item D.
I would move the consent calendar absent item B.
That's moved by Director Corona, second by Director Record. Would you do a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will go back on item D for a separate vote. Do you have a motion for item D?
I'd move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson?
Second.
Second by Director Corona. Would you do a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
No.
And that passes on a vote of 4-1. Thank you for that. We'll move to our action calendar, which is action item 5A, which is to adopt 18 proposed resolutions of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District authorizing the issuance of general obligation refunding revenue bond series 2021A for 18 improvement districts within Eastern Municipal Water District service area. Thomas, good morning.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm excited to have the opportunity to bring this item forward for board consideration. This item, something that Laura, John, and I have dedicated to accomplishing this year, and we spent a lot of time and effort getting it thus far, and we're really excited with the progress, and I'm happy to share the information with the board and seek board's approval for this item. This is pertaining to refunding of the district's outstanding general obligation bonds. Rates have continued to remain low, and with the assistance of our finance team, who've joined us here today, and I'll introduce them momentarily, an opportunity was presented to us where we were able to or potentially able to lower property taxes for over 100,000 property owners in the district service area. Two series of general obligation bonds were issued, one in 2005 and one in 2009, for a course of 29 improvement districts. And it was totaling, at the time, $49.8 million. Over the years, 11 of the improvement district bonds have matured, thus remaining 18 as identified in the list at the bottom of this slide. More about these improvement districts. They encompass a really large part of the district service area. They're outlined in the colors on the map. District staff worked with our excellent folks in the GIS team at Eastern to put this map together to identify each improvement district that's being impacted by this refunding relative to the district service area. As you could see, the improvement districts are well represented in all of your divisions, as well as all of the major cities in the district service area. In total, there's approximately 122,000 looks like this slide wasn't updated. 122,000 parcels, 20,000 of which have overlapping borders with other improvement districts, which actually brings the total to 102,000. We pulled more recent data pull from the county, worked with our GIS team, and have the updated numbers. So 122,000 overlapping parcels and 102,000 individual parcels. As I mentioned, rates have remained low, and long-term tax-exempt rates in particular remain attractive, even though there's some volatility this year. As you could see in the graph on the left, it's circled in red on the right-hand side, rates remain really low, near all-time historic lows. Pictured on the left is the AAA MMD rates, which is essentially state-rated, AAA state-rated GO bonds. And since 2000, rates have trended downward with occasional spikes. The last spike is right on the left-hand side of the red oval, which occurred in March of 2020, where COVID-19 fears and uncertainty was running rampant, and a lot of folks were pulling funds and cash out of high-rated securities and moving them into cash. Since then, rates lowered. They hit historic lows in August of 2020. And then pictured on the right is really a closer look at rates over the last year. As I mentioned, there's been some volatility, as you could see in the spring. Then they kind of stabilize, and high-grade municipal utility credits, such as Eastern, remain in strong demand, similar to what we experienced in June when we were last in the market, wherein we were able to refund some bonds and also unwind the district's last swap agreement with Wells Fargo. We were able to achieve very favorable financing then, and we experienced strong demand when we went to market. We're hoping to experience the same demand come December. And with rates remaining low right now, it's not certain that they will remain low into next year. The Federal Reserve recently announced they'll begin tapering their economic support beginning this month. Then with inflation fears, there's some expectation that rates will begin rising as early next year. As a way of background, there will be two items today, one for the Eastern Municipal Board, Eastern Municipal Water District Board, and then one for the EMWD Financing Authority. I put this slide together to offer some clarity and some additional information pertaining to the two actions. So in April 2015, the Eastern Board established the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority to finance capital projects and refund bonds through the issuance of revenue bonds. And prior to that, the district had used the authority that was set up with the JPA with Rancho, the Western Riverside Water Wastewater Financing Authority, to issue these GO bonds. The team felt it was more appropriate for the district's authority, now that we have it since 2015, to issue these, as the district's net revenue serves as a backstop of these bonds should there be any issues with collections via property tax assessments. If you recall, the authority with the JPA with Rancho recently had a pooled refunding back in January of this year, where we were able to refund 12 different series of CFD bonds. Going forward, it's expected that that authority will issue CFD-related land-secured pooled refundings, and this authority will be used to issue revenue bonds on behalf of the district. And this authority has issued revenue bonds since 2015 for the district. So this really isn't anything new. Now, the financing authority will issue the bonds, which will be secured by the ad valorem taxes within each improvement district, and then paid as debt service on the GO bonds that are issued by the improvement districts. This table just shows the par amount outstanding for each series of bonds, and then at the bottom right, just a summary table. In total, $27.86 million is set to be refunded. Financing has been prepared in compliance with the district's comprehensive debt policy and will meet all of the requirements set forth in that policy. At the time the presentation was finalized, as of the last week of October, the net present value savings is estimated at $8.15 million, or just about 29% of the refunded par. So considerable savings that we are very excited to pass on to homeowners within these improvement districts. No new money will be issued, and the term of the bonds won't be extended. So the final maturity of the bonds is still the 2039 date. True interest cost is estimated to remain low and currently estimated at 1.976%. This table on this slide just puts everything together. The improvement district number and name are located on the columns on the left, followed by the number of the individual parcels. This number has slightly been lowered since our last data pull with the county. So the total is 122,000. It wasn't really affected any particular improvement district, but most of them just lowered slightly. Then the par amount outstanding is in the middle column of the table, and then the final maturity. As you could see, four improvement district bonds mature over the next few years, followed by a majority of them maturing in 2035 when the bonds related to the 2005 issuance would mature, and then the rest of them in 2039, which would be related to the 2009 issuance. The far right column, which is probably the most important on this table, shows the present value savings per improvement district. And the amount of savings is dependent on several factors, namely the par amount outstanding as well as the final maturity. As I mentioned, several members of the financing team have joined us in person today. I'd like to just take a brief moment to introduce them. The district's municipal advisor, PFM, we have Darren Hodge here. And then also from the district's bond counsel from Stradling, Yoko Carlson Routh, we have Brian Forbath. There he is. And then we also have from the underwriter for this transaction from JP Morgan Securities, Tyler Old. I'm proud of the work the entire team has accomplished on this project and the support the team has provided the district. I also want to acknowledge the outstanding work that they've done and also thank Joe and Laura for their support as John and I continue to champion this effort. The entire team will be available to answer questions following the recommendation. As far as the schedule goes, we conducted a ratings call with Fitch Ratings on November 10th, and it's expected we'll receive a rating within the next week or two. Today, we're seeking board approval, followed by an authority approval a little bit later this morning. Then we'll be posting the POS on November 29th. The bonds are expected to be priced on or around December 6th, depending on market conditions, come December. And then the transaction will close on December 17th, which is when the prior bonds will be called. Recommendation for today is to adopt 18 proposed resolutions, which is one for each of the refunded improvement districts, the sale of bonds in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $28.43 million. Also approve the related documents necessary for this transaction, and then authorize the president, the GM, the deputy GM, CFO, and secretary of the board of directors to execute and deliver the necessary actions for this transaction. Be happy to answer any questions, and as I mentioned, we have the financing team available as well.
Director Armstrong?
Well, congratulations first. That's incredible savings on this transaction, so, you know, great job. Just a question on the rating. So did you say you did a presentation with Fitch?
Yes.
And only Fitch? Or?
Yes. So the size of this deal, being at 23, I think was the 23.5 million, really didn't necessitate an additional ratings. We went with Fitch because the way they rate them a little bit higher than S&P would, and so if we're only going to go with one, we might as well go with the highest one we could get.
Yeah.
Also, we had recently met with Fitch in June, as well as last year. We've had really positive feedback from them. Feel like momentum is really going in our favor with Fitch, and so we really, put the pedal to the metal with Fitch, last week, and we're expected to get some good results with this.
What's our current rating with Fitch?
So currently, AA plus positive outlook, we're really trying to get the AAA, and that's really what we push for on this.
Any other questions? Director Record?
Yeah, I concur with Director Armstrong. Congratulations. It's so rare that we were able to do something for our ratepayers that's positive in today's world. How are they going to know about it? I mean, it's going to be a different amount on their property tax bill, correct?
Yes, that's a great question. So what we did in January, we lowered the property taxes for 4,000 homes. What we were able to do is calculate each parcel savings and then mail out individual letters signed by the president of the board. This refunding, a little bit, you know, more dynamic, right? With over 100,000 parcels, we don't have a consultant to, you know, help us prepare that or even fold envelopes for that matter. So what we did, and then also with the complexity of the property taxes, each improvement district has a tax rate, which was approved by the board in July. So savings won't be experienced until, or won't be realized until next year's property tax bills. So what we did, and because the tax rate is assessed on the home's assessed value, you could have, you know, five streets or five homes on a street, and they're all going to experience different amount of savings. Instead of sending out a letter, and we looked at, you know, the costs associated with that, you know, 100,000 homes, you know, times the cost of a postage stamp, it could have been considerable amount of not only mailing expenses, but also staff effort and time, and it just really complex. What we decided to do was take a more cost-effective approach in notifying not only the homeowners that live in these respective improvement districts, but also just a general Eastern Municipal Water District customer. So what we're going to do is work with PGA as far as outreach, include something in the newsletter, social media postings, and do more of a broad outreach effort to show the results and the amount of savings.
Sounds good. I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second. We have Director Record has moved.
Second.
Director Armstrong has seconded. Before I have a roll call vote, I too just want to chime in and say great job for the whole finance team. And as Director Record pointed out, we are doing something to lower the cost for our rate payers, and that is kind of rare in today's world. So I'm glad we're also going to be able to tell them about it. I also want to note, any time we do a, you know, seven or eight, in this case, eight-figure transaction here, yeah, I do appreciate the fact that people come out to our board meetings that are involved in it. So I want to thank you guys for coming here today. I think it shows a lot of reason, you know, that you're engaged in the process. And as a board member, I really do appreciate people coming to our board meetings and here to answer questions if needed. So with that, may I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Thank you very much. We will move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize agreements for the Santa Ana River Conservation and Conjunctive Use Program. Good morning. Gordon. Good
morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Before we go into the update on the Santa Ana River Conservation and Conjunctive Use Program, or SARCUP, just a quick minor housekeeping issue. So I'll be giving Leanne Kirk's portion of the presentation as well, but she is dialed in to the call if there are any questions. So she'll be able to handle that. And just as a personal note, I would ask that you direct all the hard questions to her, and I'll take the easy ones. So. So going right into it, so just some background or a recap on SARCUP. This is a joint effort by multiple regional agencies to develop a watershed level multi-benefit, multi-use program. And about a third of the cost of this program is coming from Prop 84 grant funding. And of that, EMWD is receiving just under $13 million for facilities that we're putting in. And so our contributions to SARCUP is going to include three potable wells, the 40-acre Mountain Avenue West recharge facility, as well as a number of conveyance pipelines. And so essentially under SARCUP, the goal, the big goal of this program is to allow imported water to be banked in groundwater basins throughout the watershed during wet years. And just as a point of clarification, agencies will be able to bank water in basins that are outside of their respective service area. And having this banked water available will obviously increase our water supply reliability, and it'll also have the benefit of accounting as an extraordinary supply if Met chooses to implement their water supply allocation plan. And the benefit of an extraordinary supply is if Metropolitan does implement this water supply allocation plan, the volume of water that has been designated as an extraordinary supply would only partially count as towards our local supplies that are available, which has the effect of increasing our imported water allocation. And since this is a watershed scale program, there's a large number of entities that are involved. I'll highlight that we have two state water project contractors, Metropolitan, as well as San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District. And then there are going to be four agencies that are going to be doing the physical banking of the water. That'll be us, Orange County Water District, San Bernardino Valley, as well as Western. IEUA is part of the development of this program, but currently they're not offering any groundwater banking capacity at this time. And so this slide just shows the program storage capacities by basin throughout the watershed. So SARCUP is targeting a total storage capacity of 137,000 acre feet. EMWD is contributing a total of 19,500 acre feet in our San Jacinto Basin, located on the near the bottom right-hand corner of this slide. And again, as I noted earlier, we're not going to be limited to that 19,500 acre feet. If there's more water available, we could choose to store that elsewhere as part of this program. This slide shows the locations of the infrastructure that will be required as part of the SARCUP program. And so these are the facilities that will be needed to bank as well as withdraw water, or if participating agencies want to complete transfers or exchanges of water. Again, these are kind of some of the facilities that are going to get put in. And I'll highlight again EMWD's contribution near the bottom right-hand corner of this figure. We have our Mountain Avenue West recharge basin as well as three water wells. And so as part of the development of SARCUP, we've identified the need for a data management tool due to just the complexity of this program. As I've been noting, we could have water stored in multiple groundwater basins, and we would potentially need to reimburse multiple agencies as part of the operations of SARCUP, and that would be true of the other participating agencies as well. And so there's a financial tracking and reconciliation element that would be associated with that beyond just the tracking of the physical water. And so what we have here is just a figure that gives an example of how, for example, Eastern could end up with water stored in a basin managed by Western Municipal Water District. And so in this example, water would be imported by Valley, flow to Metropolitan, you know, which would then get delivered to Western for banking. And then on the financial side, Eastern would have to, you know, fund Western's costs to do the recharge, and then, you know, Western would have to reimburse Met for the water, and then Met would have to pay Valley. And so there's just a lot of moving pieces. And so having a data management tool would obviously help keep everything straight, and that's something that we want to make sure we do. And this tool will also support planning for the SARCUP operations as well as long-term, you know, resource planning. So we'll, using this tool, we'll be able to get a snapshot of, you know, how much water is available to be recharged, how much water is available in storage, or how much can be pumped out under, you know, different conditions. So we've identified a number of requirements that will kind of ensure the success of this tool. Since a big component of this is to facilitate use and collaboration between multiple agencies, we'd like this to be a web-based tool, and obviously with that there comes a need for security, authentication, and authorization, just to make sure that the data is secure. And then on the day-to-day planning and usage of this tool, we want to be able to look at information both at kind of at a summary level and at a detail level, again, to support the planning of the program operation as well as the financial reconciliation. And so what we did is we reached out to a firm, DBSNA, to get an idea of what this might look like. And as part of their proposal to us, they actually prepared a mock-up of what this tool could be. And so we have a screenshot to the right here that shows an example of what a dashboard might look like. And I actually have some additional screenshots in subsequent slides, so diving right into it. These screenshots here on the slide show some of the transactional components that might need to be tracked as part of this data tool. And so on the left here, we have an example of potentially how offers of water that are available to be, banked or withdrawn or transferred could be tracked. And then on the right, we have a screen that shows, again, potential transfers and exchanges between participating agencies. These screenshots show kind of some of the potential reporting elements of the tool. So on the left, we have the data shown in a tabular format. And then on the right, we show that we can generate a report in a graphical format. So again, this would be to support both day-to-day planning as well as the necessary financial reconciliation that would be part of this program. So we've discussed this with the other StarCup banking agencies, and they've agreed on both the need for this tool and the goals of this tool. And so moving forward, kind of what we'd like to look at is proceeding with the proposal that was received from DBSNA to develop this data management tool. And so the total cost is going to be $109,388. And we are proposing a cost-sharing agreement with the other participating agencies. And so this will basically reduce each agency's share to $27,347. And so with that, I have our recommendation, which is the execution of the contract with DBSNA to develop this data management tool, as well as the execution of a cost-sharing letter agreement with the other StarCup banking agencies to fund the development of the tool. And so I or Leanne will be happy to take your questions.
Questions, Director Slauson?
Yes, I think that the terms have been ongoing negotiations. What is the status of the contract or agreement?
So Director Slauson, the StarCup agreement between each StarCup agency and Metropolitan, I'm pleased to report that last week I executed that agreement per the board's approval. So Metropolitan is routing the agreement to all the StarCup agencies for execution. I am awaiting the final fully executed agreement from all the member agencies, but the agreement, I have gone ahead and executed that as I received it from Metropolitan.
Okay, great, thanks.
Gordon, I had one. It's a hard question, so you really don't have to answer it, but
thank you.
Would you say this is an example of Eastern ratepayers stepping it up for good water stewardship?
Absolutely.
Good. Good answer. All right. With that, if there's no further questions, I'll look for a motion and a second on this item.
I'll move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson and second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We will now move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize the implementation of a stage 3A of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan to address current statewide drought conditions. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. And I think we all are very proud of our customers for how much they've stepped it up. However, as the drought conditions and the state and regional responses have continued to evolve, we are requesting your consideration of the next incremental step in EMWD's water shortage contingency plan. And this request at no way discounts both the investments that EMWD has made, nor the responses that our customers have made. And as we highlighted last month, we have made significant progress in both our water use efficiency, our local resources, and have been able to accommodate a significant population growth while still reducing both our per capita and our overall imported water dependency. Through these investments, we have diversified our water supply portfolio, increasing our recycled water contribution to our water supply so that it now makes up almost 40% of our overall water supply, while also investing in our groundwater supplies through our desalter program and maintaining both the protection of our groundwater basins as well as continuing to reduce our overall reliance on imported water supply, where today it only makes up about 50% of our overall supply. Our customers have continued their commitment to water use efficiency. We are well below our 20 by 2020 reductions in terms of water use, and we've also maintained a very efficient water use since the end of the last drought. However, the statewide hydraulic conditions have been progressively deteriorating throughout 2021. And as Joe mentioned in his opening remarks, the 2020 and 2021 are recorded as the driest consecutive years on record. At the beginning of 2020, there were no parts of the state that were in extreme drought conditions. At the beginning of 2021, that evolved to 34% of the state being in extreme drought. Now today, over 80% of the state is under extreme drought. There have been multiple drought emergency declarations by the governor since April. And in July, there was also a statewide call for voluntary conservation relative to 2020 usage. During yesterday's State Water Resources Control Board meeting, State Water Resources Control Board staff reported that the statewide savings are only about 4% compared to the governor's call for the voluntary reduction. The State Water Project allocation in 2021 was only 5%, only the second time in recent history that that allocation was defined. Also coupled with a shortage declared on the Colorado River. All of these conditions and also the outlook for 2022, which DWR has currently projected and is planning for a 0% allocation. And what that means is that only health and safety water uses will be accommodated. This is a very extreme change from what we had been talking about just even a few months ago. But as we continue to look at the hydrologic conditions and as they are evolving, the responses are getting more and more important to take action. Although Lake Oroville last month, due to the late October rains, did raise by about 30 feet, it is still only about 29% of capacity and about 58% of its historic average. So again, another strong indicator that DWR is looking at in terms of when they will be assigning and how they'll be assigning the allocation for 2022. Even if the hydraulic conditions continue to improve, DWR is anticipating potentially a 25% allocation, which still, compared to historic allocations on the State Water Project, are still relatively low. As I mentioned, EMWD has done a great job. Our customers have been very responsive. We have remained in stage two of our water shortage contingency plan voluntarily since the end of the mandatory emergency drought declaration from the last period. We also have continued to make investments to support the continued water use efficiency, including the upgrades to our water usage billing system that allows customers to understand their water use and assist them to stay within their assigned budget. We also added an additional dollar per square foot to the regional turf rebate program, again, to really promote and further incentivize the replacement of non-functional turf with more water-efficient landscapes. We also partnered regionally with other agencies and launched the Inland Empire's Clean Water Partnership drought awareness campaign with the hashtag Keep It Up and incremental stages as needed to increase communication. Our customers have been responsive, and this chart here shows the comparison between July and then August and September, both on a per capita and a total water use. And you can see in August and September that our customers have continued to reduce water use as compared to 2020, associated with or the comparison to the governor's 15%, we're at about between 5.5% and 6% in overall volumetric water use, and close to 8% compared to on a per capita water use basis. So again, a positive response to our current actions. As Joe mentioned, also last week, Metropolitan took additional steps to respond to the current evolving drought conditions. And they adopted a resolution associated that declares a regional drought emergency. And what that resolution does is it calls on member agencies first to review the adequacy of past drought response measures, also asks to make reasonable efforts to reduce usage of state water project as much as practical, and also immediately mandate and implement conservation requirements, water use efficiency measures, and drought-related limitations as appropriate to reduce the use of state water project, including state water project supplies in storage. And this is an important part because EMWD does utilize state water project that is stored in Diamond Valley Lake. I also want to point out that during yesterday's State Water Resources Control Board meeting that staff did acknowledge Metropolitan's declaration and the additional asks that were part of that declaration. Sorry about that. Thanks, Lance. It's like 10. All right. As I mentioned, EMWD has remained in stage 2 of our water shortage contingency plan, and that condition is a supply alert. And under that supply alert, we request a voluntary reduction of up to 25%. And actions that we ask customers to consider include reducing watering by one day per week, repairing leaks within 48 hours, refraining from filling ornamental ponds or lakes, and also refraining from washing vehicles. And although our customers have been very responsive to this ask, we also want our customers to understand the evolving conditions and the fact that the conditions have not improved and in fact could continue to deteriorate. And so we do feel that it is important as part of that communication to also be consistent with the next incremental step in our water shortage contingency plan. And that leads us to our ask this morning, which is the request to implement stage 3A of our water shortage contingency plan, which goes into a focus on mandatory waste reduction. That is not reducing customers' budgets at this point. This is really focusing on reducing waste. It will continue the stage 2 actions that I outlined above, but it will eliminate the variances that we offer for filling pools, establishing new landscapes with the exception of those that are participating in either our Landscapes for Living or our turf replacement programs. And it will also eliminate the variance for leaks that are not repaired within 48 hours. And as I mentioned, one of the investments has been our CIS and the billing system that we now provide customers additional information and to help them identify if they do have a leak, which wasn't something that we had available to us during the last drought. And again, I do want to reinforce that there would be no impact to the customers that are staying within budget.
I get to do the next slide. Good morning. So if the board were to decide to move to 3A, we wanted to kind of go over what our outreach plan would be for such a stage. We're going to continue utilizing our existing messaging, which is really the keep it up and general good job for all the customers that are doing the right thing and staying within their water budgets. So the main part of the outreach for Stage 3A would really be targeted at our water wasters. Direct mail to those, we would pull the database so we would know who's consistently going over their water budgets to be able to give them information about what they need to do to reduce and get within their water budgets that really resonates with what 3A is about, which is eliminating the water waste that's available out there. We would obviously have additional outreach efforts communicating the other parameters of 3A, meaning the variances that would no longer be eligible for pool refilling or the leaks and the leak detection program. We have a lot of opportunities there to communicate with customers now about the fact that this drought could escalate quickly for us and cause us to have to go into other phases. So we want to get the message out now that they need to pay attention. Not that they're going to be directly impacted at this point, but that they do need to pay attention to the changes that we're seeing. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over.
All right, and that brings us to our recommendation this morning and our request of your consideration to approve and authorize the implementation of the 3A of our water shortage contingency plan. And I want to reinforce that our ask is exclusive of people that are participating in the Landscapes for Living or regional turf replacement programs from the landscape variance standpoint. We don't want there to be any perception that we're not still encouraging landscape transformation. And in fact, you know, as you know, Metropolitan recently added an additional dollar to the regional program. We are planning on incorporating that into our program and also and adding that additional dollar, so we'll be offering $4 a square foot. So that's a really important part of our overall water use efficiency and that outreach to the customers. So we don't want there to be any perception that that program would be impacted or that they could be penalized for changing out their landscape during this time. And with that, I'll take any questions or comments.
We'll start. I'm sure the board has lots of questions and comments, including myself, but we will start with Director Armstrong.
Okay, thank you. So I do have some questions, but I wanted to start with just going back over the last few years, and maybe Director Record, if he wants to elaborate on this or help a little bit, he can. But it seems like Metropolitan has done a great job in investing in storage. And I've seen charts over the years that, you know, we have all this storage that would last a number of years, and the supply is there. And I don't know if that's still the case today or not, where we have this, we had record amount of storage like a year ago or something like that. And so I know that you know, we all have to comply with the state and the governor's, you know, order and all that, but it seems like just that there is still, is there recognition of the efforts and the investments that we've all made through Metropolitan as customers in the storage of water to help us, you know, navigate through this? And I don't know if that water is still all there or not, but.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Last year, I mean, typically Met sold 2 million acre feet. It's down to 1.5, 1.6. Coupled that with the most water in storage ever, which is like 3 million acre feet just in Lake Mead. So we've got a few years' worth of supply. So it's really remarkable. But I think the other side of that is we've never seen conditions like this. We've never seen a drought declaration on the Colorado River. We've never seen Oroville so low. So you got to kind of weigh the two. But and I agree with that completely. And I want to take it to where we are here at Eastern, and we just approved the SARCUP deal, which we've been working on for a while. I mean, that's a big investment by our ratepayers. We're one of the few agencies that recycles everything. You see that in the graphs about how we're less reliant on imported water. Two of the biggest agencies in Met send most of their recycled water to the ocean, and there's reasons for that. I'm not picking on them, but, you know, here we are. We never went out of stage two, and if you look on slide 4 at the line, it keeps going down. So we didn't rebound after 2017. And you can see that our water usage tracks with the weather. 2019, a wet year, our use is down. So, where do you,
right?
How do you congratulate your ratepayers for doing a great job and paying rates that allow us to make these kinds of investments, and then say, it's still not enough? The one thing about this is that I don't think what 3A entails is really hard to live with. It is wintertime, so theoretically you shouldn't need a whole lot of water to establish a different landscape, and maybe that gives us time to get to some rainfall, and maybe we do get a 25% allocation. I think probably, you know, and I hate to say this, but in the future we need to say, okay, drought's over. We're going back to stage one because we didn't last time and we got penalized for it, and it's not fair to our ratepayers. And that's why this board, you know, being progressive as we always are, has said, let's focus on outdoor landscape and non-functional turf, and that's where the opportunities are, because we're sending a really bad message. Can't do that overnight. So, you know, I'm really torn on this. I think that we need to do it just to say, okay, the state asked for it, and we're gonna do it. If you look at slide 9, I think it's very interesting that Met says, review the adequacy of past drought response measures. Well, it's really simple. Demand hardening. We haven't gone back up. So you can't keep doing this forever. And how do we get the message out that we really appreciate what our ratepayers have done, not only funding capital projects, but reducing their water use? And, you know, just another step further is that I talked to Jolene in April this morning about, it's probably time to get those banners out for our recycled customers so that the public knows that these growers and whatever else is being irrigated, it's being irrigated with recycled water. I think that would probably be really appropriate.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying kind of ties into what I think, is that this agency has been very progressive and, like you said, didn't go all the way back to stage one or whatever. And so what I would like to know is, what are the other agencies doing right now? And what are, and not just our neighbors, but, you know, throughout the state? And are we getting ahead of this again and going to penalize ourselves again by taking a step to this degree where others aren't doing that yet? And so I guess that's one question. And the other part of it is, I just looking at the stages, and I'm not that familiar with all of Eastern's, you know, stages, but it seems like there's a difference between waste and variance in this stage where, I mean, we're funding, helping approve CFDs for new homes. If they're going to come in, they're going to want to establish landscape. And then we're not going to give them a variance for establishing landscape, which is different than leaks and repairing leaks and wasting water. I can see that, but I kind of have a hard time with not allowing people to establish their landscape or fill their pool right now, unless everybody else is doing the same thing. So that's my comment.
I appreciate that, Director Armstrong, and I just wanted to also agree with the comments made by Director Record. A couple of things. I think one of the things you asked about is the investments that our customers have made and other agencies that are part of Metropolitan. You're absolutely right. We've collectively made significant investments over the last two decades. What has changed quickly over the last few months is the recognition that there is going to be 0% allocation on the State Water Project going into 2022. And Metropolitan has identified several regions within a service area that are exclusively dependent on State Water Project supplies. And so they are having those discussions with DWR as far as what does 0% allocation mean if those agencies don't have any other source of water to serve their customers. So under the contract provisions between DWR and Metropolitan, there is still, as Linnea mentioned, a health and safety delivery option. So they are having those discussions with DWR. But having said that, and knowing that if they get into that health and safety delivery mode, which Metropolitan staff does not anticipate until February or possibly March, they're going to rely on storage initially, then DWR is already communicating that there could be further restrictions, including restrictions on outdoor irrigation. So to that point, Metropolitan not only adopted the regional drought emergency declaration last month, but they're asking all agencies, including us and Western, who utilize State Water Project supplies to reduce our take so that that supply is available to those agencies that are exclusively reliant on State Water Project. The conversation we're having with Metropolitan staff and us as well as Western is the classification of the water stored in DVL. We recognize the majority of that water origin was State Water Project, but our position is that when that water was delivered to DVL, it did not have the restrictions that DWR is currently discussing as well as far as health and safety. So we're having that conversation with Metropolitan staff as well as Western is joining us in that conversation. So I think we still need to determine where ultimately the classification of that DVL storage lies. To your other question, as far as where others are, Inland Empire Utilities Agency is planning to go to their board on December 8th to recommend stage two of their water shortage contingency plan, which still calls for voluntary reductions. Western is currently in a stage two, which calls for a voluntary 15% reduction. Elsinore Valley is going to their board on November 23rd, requesting stage two as well. Of the water shortage contingency plan. So we are starting to see others respond to Metropolitan's drought declaration. Everyone's got a unique water shortage contingency plan. When we looked at our plan, we saw 3A as a limited next step into the waste or mandatory waste reduction. We are, as Linnea mentioned, although we are proposing to suspend variances until conditions improve, we are going to exempt any participant in our Landscapes for Living program as well as the turf removal program. We recognize, to your point, that you know if someone is coming to us for funding support for a drip system or a smart controller or turf removal incentives, it's not fair and it's not adequate to provide incentives from one end to do the right thing, but yet then reduce their variance to be able to accomplish that. So we have that obviously part of our recommendations to provide those exemptions. Also, as I think someone may have mentioned, I believe it was Director of Record mentioned, we're currently in the winter season, so you know, that is another consideration versus, you know, if we were in another part of the year. So we agree wholeheartedly with what the board has said and what the board has said repeatedly, which is our customers have been incredibly responsive to our calls over the years, and the data represents that. We've done all the right things over the years. What we are concerned about is the outlook going forward, and that things may take, hopefully not, further changes that may be on the horizon as far as DWR and the State Water Project. So that's what we're concerned about is the next several months and how things are going to evolve. But given that, we felt that we should start thinking about, you know, where do we go? And of course, with the Met declaration last week, we felt it would be appropriate to bring this forward for discussion with the board.
No, thank you. And that was super helpful on the whole supply situation and why, you know, these are impacting even our customers, even in Diamond Valley Lake, potentially that water. So just to be clear, though, Joe, on your comparisons to the other agencies and where they're moving, it sounded to me like they're still moving to a point that's not even where we're at right now today. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Dr. Thompson, I should qualify that many of the agencies don't have the gradation in their plans. Many of them have from a stage two voluntary reduction to a reduction in their tiered budget, which to us would equate to a stage 3B or a 3C. So in talking to some of the other general managers, that's their challenge, is how do they respond to this without then taking even more drastic action than what we're recommending to the board today. So some of them don't have that gradation in their water shortage contingency plan.
Thank you.
Can I ask for clarification on the establishing plants and filling pools? What we're doing is we're not preventing them to do that, doing that. We're just not giving them the variance on the cost. So it just costs hundreds of dollars more maybe for a pool.
Yeah, that's correct. And I also just want to clarify, it for new landscape that fits within the landscape ordinances, then their ET factor that will be applied will be adequate for them to establish their landscape. Usually where those variances for landscape come into play is if somebody is putting in backyard turf and they need a higher conservation factor for the time that turf is being established. But for the drought-tolerant landscapes that we're really promoting, we're not really seeing that as being an issue. We will also adjust budgets for people that are adding landscape. So, for example, you know, our budgets are based on irrigated area. If somebody's adding irrigated area, that will obviously be adjusted as part of their budget.
That's helpful.
Dr. Corona?
Yeah. Can we go back to the slide? Like, I think it's like the very first slide where you had that one right there. Okay, so on the imported water, it says down 3%. Is that imported water figure? Is that raw and so we're using a lot of raw water. So if and that's going back into recharge, so that we can reuse that. What would be the number? What is the number of treated water? Because I think that the treated water would be down, instead of that number being only down 3, I think it would be down even further, because the raw water is going to be utilized at a later date because it's being used for recharge.
That's a great point, Dr. Corona, and you're right. Since establishment of the Water Master participants working with the Met have imported raw water for recharge in the San Jacinto Basin. And I think to your point is perhaps we should look at the data deducting those raw water imports, as well as, frankly, when cyclic water was available. That was also something that we imported raw water for recharge. So we'll look at that data. We'll segment that data to back out that raw water importation. As you know, we also import raw water for our filtration plants, for the Hemet filtration plant as well as the Paris filtration plant. But I think what you're asking is there was raw water imported for recharge purposes, and we should look at that separately from the overall importation of water.
Yeah, and the other thing, I talked about the pool refilling thing. I have a little bit of a problem with that, not that I'm a big pool guy or anything, but, you know, when people are refilling pools, you know, they're pulling the water out of the pool, and that water's going someplace. And my guess is most of it's going down the drain and going on back into the underground somehow. So it's almost like, well, okay, we're going to get that water. It's going to go back in the underground. It's going to get used again. They're refilling the pool. Maybe they should charge us a recharge fee. I don't know. But I just think it's kind of a minor thing. But the other thing I was thinking about some of the things Randy was saying about how much really in Southern California, how much we do to preserve water, to and maintain systems and things like that. And if you go north of the Tehachapis, a whole lot less is done. And there are so many opportunities in that area. I mean, we go back to when we had all that rain a few years back, and everything was full and everything. And you know, I think about how much we do to recharge basins, and how little really was done. That was just that one big opportunity where all that water was available. And why wasn't, I mean, when winter time came and they had to take 50% of the water out of Lake Oroville, and how come with all these dormant crops and everything that are sitting, why wasn't water put onto land for recharge and things like that? It was just like everything. They're just not prepared up north to do the things that we do all the time down here, you know. I think the state's going to have to really look at some of this stuff. When you have the opportunity, and when you get those big rains and you have full reservoirs, you need to have a place to put it and refill those underground basins, which have far more capacity than our above ground reservoirs, instead of just letting the water go and having it go out to the ocean. A little soapbox speech there.
So one other comment, I agree with that, you know, completely. On slide 11, I appreciate that you're not sending the step it up letters to everybody. And it's just the people that are consistently over their allocation. So that's it may seem like, you know, a minor point, but I think it's really important that we don't want to hammer on people that are continue to do a good job.
We agree, Dr. Record, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're going to maintain the Keep It Up campaign. And as you saw last month, 80% of our customers stay within their water budget. That's tremendous effort by our customers. But it is those that may exceed our water budget that we want to reach out to and just have, again, additional communication with.
I would... First of all, I echo everything Director Record says on what we've done over the years. He's much more elegant than myself in saying it. But, again, we really have done a great job here. And I the fact, as he pointed out, we're only going to send these step it up to people that need to step it up probably has changed my vote on this, because I came in here a little disturbed over the fact that we're going to tell people that have done the right thing to step it up some. I had some real heartburn on that. But going back, and this is kind of a rhetorical question, but on the pool item, so we are going to say if you're going to refill your pool, we're not going to give you a variance under this. That's fine. At the same time, the state of California is not allowing us to shut off people who have consistently now not paying their bill, and theoretically those people go out and fill their pool twice a week. So, I mean, the state, the state sends these inconsistent messages. We have a tiered rate system that puts a value on water, and we haven't been able to do anything, because if you're not paying your water bill, your water's free. It's valueless to you. Why would you want to conserve if I'm not paying a water bill? But, I mean, the pool thing really sticks out to me of the absurdity of the state of California not allowing us to take action against people that are, you know, not paying their water bill, especially when we have a lot of programs here to help people that are having financial difficulties. So that, to me, was a little absurd. Well, but.
So I'm curious, and I doubt that we have any data, but why are people refilling their pools? Is it because they emptied them to fix a leak? And wouldn't we encourage that? So,
I don't know. Do you have any data on this?
We don't have specific data on the pool refills. We could pull that data for you. However, we do suspect that given the time of the year, we're not going to see very many of those.
Right. True. I just wanted to point out that the fact that we are going to charge people to refill their pool while others are not paying their water bill.
Is it just refill, or is it also fill your pool? Because there's still a lot of, I mean, see new pools going in all the time. Can you fill your pool, or?
Theoretically, it's just refill, I believe, in the admin code itself. However, filling a pool would likely send somebody over their water budget. And
you,
for that.
So you wouldn't get a variance, you couldn't get a variance for that under 3A?
I'd have to confirm how we've done that in the past.
I think that on refills, I think if a pool gets filled and then over a period of time through evaporation, you get concentrated salts and things like that that get in the pool, and then that reduces the efficacy of the chemicals that they use to for chlorination and things like that. So I think that's the reason you would refill a pool, because it seemed to me it cost, you know, water costs money. I wouldn't fill a pool if it didn't need refilling, but you know, I think that's the refill question. Or if you do repair.
It wouldn't be interesting, as Director Armstrong points out, there's a lot of new homes going in. People may want to put a pool in. I'd hate to be the person that says, no, you just spent a bunch of money on your pool at your house and you can't put water in it.
Skateboard park.
Yeah, I mean, so... Maybe we could figure a clarification.
Yeah, we'll look at that, President Paul. And I think the intent here was, given the current conditions, and given, again, the fact that we're in the cooler season, that if there is maintenance to be done on a pool where you have to drain it or you have to change out the water quality, perhaps this is not the best time to do so. We're trying to message out that you may want to wait to do that. But I think, to President Pauly's point, we'll look into the specific language in the admin code relative to, you know, if someone builds a pool, you know, if the initial filling, if we can still provide a variance for that initial filling. I think the intent here was to just message out that this is not the best time to empty your pool and to change out the water. But we'll look into that, President Pauly. I realize what we brought before you today is a significant item for the board's consideration, and we appreciate the conversation. What I can commit to you is, obviously, you know, we're going to keep the board abreast of all developments on this issue. And if conditions statewide improve, then obviously we're going to be coming before you very as quickly as possible to ratchet down whatever stage we're at. And I agree with Director Record's point that, you know, we've always done the right thing voluntarily. And, you know, I don't want to necessarily ask of our customers more than what is needed. But we will come back to this board, and if we have the ability to ratchet down the stages, we will absolutely do that. So we're going to keep you aware of the conditions as they evolve.
So if I can, I agree with all the comments, the State Water Project, all the comments here today. I do think that we have to send some sort of message to our ratepayers, because we do want to conserve, and it's unfortunate because we've invested so much, but still we rely on State Water Project water. So I'm in support of the proposal. As far as the pool refill, and I've never talked or heard this much about refilling pools. Don't we have, in order to qualify for a variance, aren't you allowed only every 8 years or something? I thought there was some five?
Every 5 years.
Okay, so they can't just do it because they don't want to bother cleaning their pool very often. And as far as the draining, throughout the years, I've heard a number of people, they drain it into the sewer, if the public sewer is there when they empty the pool. Because I had one call from the mayor of Moreno Valley some years ago, complaint, draining his pool water, all started backing up, real upset with the MWD. So where does he live? Oh, Dean Ranch. Well, there's no sewer there. He was putting it in the septic tanks. So we're a half acre lot. So I support it. It's unfortunate, but I think we just need to proceed.
Before motion's made, I just think, again, that Eastern's been a leader in a lot of ways, including developing supplies and improving supply reliability. But it still sounds to me like here we're going to lead in how we implement. Not the messaging is fine, but the stage, and we're going to be out in front of everybody else. Our customers have done all this investment. We're now going to go out in front of everybody else and tell them to conserve even more or no variances. You know, the leaks and all of that I get, but it's the variances for normal things where other agencies aren't doing that yet. You know, what about San Diego? What about Orange County? What about all these other areas? And I feel like we're punishing our customers because we never dropped back to stage one, I guess it was, and we're, so I, that's the part that I, you know, it's that, it's the part that I just kind of have concern that we're jumping out in front of everybody else on this at the expense of our customers.
So on the variances, how does that work? I mean, do you go over and then you come in and ask for a variance, or do you ask for one before?
So on the pool refill, you ask before. Okay. And so you actually go through the process and you have to get it approved before you would be before you'd be credited on your bill. For other types of variances, and again, this gets into, you know, when we talk about variances, I feel like we kind of have two categories. We have variances that are kind of temporary water use issues, and then we have variances that are associated with a budget change. And that's not, we're not talking like variances, again, we categorize them as variances when somebody calls and says, oh, I have four people living with me now instead of two. Or we have, you know, again, we're now adding another, you know, 100 square feet of landscape that we didn't have before. We want our budget, you know, we want a variance. We're not talking about those types of variances. It's only variances associated with changing, like I said, if you're going to adding turf to your backyard and you need, you know, a factor of 0.8 for 6 months while the turf is getting established, that's what we're talking about. In that category of variance, typically we get the ask after.
Okay. How many do you get, would you guess?
So on that type of variance, we get about 1,000 to 1,500 a year.
President Pauly, if I can maybe add one more comment. I appreciate Dr. Armstrong's comment about us being a leader in not only the industry, but all these issues that we are challenged with. Just some consideration. As we're all aware, last drought, the state came out with mandatory restrictions. My interpretation is what Metropolitan's trying to achieve with this approach is try to retain some local control. That may succeed, hopefully, or it may fail. The state may still go forward with mandatory restrictions. I think what the hope is that the member agencies will respond to Metropolitan's call, and there will be sufficient action where the state will allow Metropolitan's member agencies to retain control over their destiny as far as how they manage through this drought condition. So I support that approach by Metropolitan. I hope they're successful, but we never know. The state could look at the numbers and they may decide to take more drastic action. But I think it's in that vein, in that effort, that we're bringing this item forward.
Do I have a motion on the item?
I'll move it.
Second. So moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Record. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
No.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
The item passes 4-1. Thank you for the presentation. Why don't we take about a 10-minute break? Very reluctant aye, because I'm going to reconvene. So, the next order of business we had scheduled at 10:30, and we're a few minutes late. At 10:30 is the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority meeting of November 17th, 2021. I'm going to call the meeting to order here. April, do we have anybody wanting to do public comment on this meeting?
No, we do not.
Very good. Item 2 is the approval of the minutes from September 15th, 2021. I will make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Make it a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Item 3 is to adopt a proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority authorizing issuance of its Funding Revenue Bonds, Series 2021A.
Good morning. Glad to be back in front of you guys. The presentation is the same as the one I went through earlier.
Yeah.
I could certainly do that, and this time I promise to pronounce necessitate correctly. But to save everybody's time, I just wanted to open it up for any additional questions that may have come to mind, and also just identify that the financing authority is taking a separate action than that of the Eastern Board. On this one, there's just one resolution being adopted as opposed to the 18 resolutions from Eastern Board. And then there's also the authority has to approve the related documents and sign in its, section versus the Eastern Board. The September meeting, we just had the quarterly, financial quarterly report, which we do every year, and then we have these, infrequent financing authority items when we have a proposed financing come up. So in this case, we had one in September, and then now we have one in November. But aside from that, is there any questions, or can I answer anything or speak to anything?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Thank you for clarifying necessitate. Appreciate that.
Sure.
We have a motion by Director Corona, a second by Director Record. Get a roll call vote, please.
Dr. Pauly?
Aye.
Dr. Record?
Aye.
Dr. Corona?
Aye.
Dr. Slauson?
Aye.
Dr. Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. We will adjourn the meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority to our next scheduled meeting on Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022 at 10:30 a.m. We will go back to our regular meeting of the Board of Directors. I believe we have an informational item, the Financial Participation Charges Study Report. Mr. Adams.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the Board. This morning's presentation is an informational item for the Board regarding the results of the 2021 Financial Participation Charges Study. As the Board is aware, one of the strategic priorities of the district is to ensure that EMWD's fees are fair and equitable, and that each customer class pays its proportionate fair share while generating sufficient revenues to meet EMWD's financial obligations. Financial participation charges, or better known as connection fees, are collected from new development to pay for planned and existing water, wastewater, and recycled water facilities. These charges ensure that everyone pays their fair share of the district's capital facilities and infrastructure. Staff believes the new study does accomplish a fair and equitable fee for new development. FPCs were last studied 10 years ago in 2011. Prior to 2011, the district did not annually adjust FPC fees. Based on the 2011 study, the district has adjusted rates annually for inflation, utilizing the Engineering News Record, or ENR, Annual Construction Cost Index. This annual adjustment, as you will hear very shortly, has been very beneficial for the district. Based on the results of the new study, only a modest increase over the current rates are required when you factor in the newest ENR increase over the past year, which has been 8.4%. From a timeline perspective, the district did issue an RFP last fall, and through that process, Corolo Engineers was selected to perform the study. The project started at the beginning of this year with the district staff collaborating with Corolo to complete the study. I want to thank John Ward, Corey Wallace, Laura Barraza, and Sean Stone for their assistance in this project. Now, I'd like to introduce Mark Panny from Corolo Engineers, who is very familiar with their district, as he will be presenting the results of the study. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Thanks for the time this morning. So I think John gave a good introduction of the study and our what we've been working on over the last year. Just in the interest of time, I'm going to move through some of the slides relatively quickly, but please feel free to interrupt me with questions or any comments that you have. Just going to try to focus on some of the more results and recommendations-oriented slides. So just overview of what we are focusing on today. Just want to talk about the goals, expand a little bit on what John said, talk about the methodology both that we took and that went into the current fees, highlight some of the changes that have taken place over the last 10 years and how we've incorporated those into the study, then show the proposed FPCs, the recommendations that we have in place, talk about a few other policy considerations, show a comparison with other agencies just to give you a benchmark, and then finally close with next steps. Just a reminder, these are draft results. We're working through the report, finalizing that. So we wanted to bring this to you to give you a chance to provide feedback. So what is a successful FPC? So John mentioned it's a one-time fee paid by New Connections. The idea is that you're allocating a fair share, fair and equitable share of both the existing system, the assets and infrastructure that you've already built, and that's part of the system, as well as the future system, things that will be built to serve that new development. You want to find a fair and equitable share to charge those new customers to make sure that they are both reimbursing this district for existing infrastructure as well as paying for the new infrastructure that will be necessary. I'm going to just kind of gloss over these quickly. There's a few different methodologies you can take for calculating FPCs, industry standard approaches. There's buy-in. That's where you take the existing system, divide it by and allocate the existing system to new customers. The expansion, where it's purely growth, growth pays for growth, you know, new storage tank, 100% growth, right? And then the last one is the hybrid. That is what the existing fee structure is based on, and that's the methodology that we used in this study. To really distill it down, FPC is just a division problem. We're taking the system value and dividing it by the system capacity. The question is, you know, how do you define system value? How do you define system capacity? And that's where those approaches come into play. As I said, we use the hybrid approach, which takes the existing assets and the future assets and divides them by the future projected capacity. And just to you know, remind you where the FPCs are currently, effective January of this year, they are at $14,569 per new connection for both water and sewer. Water is charged per equivalent meter unit. That's benchmarked against a 3/4-inch meter. That's, you know, your standard single-family home. Wastewater is equivalent dwelling unit, also benchmarked against single-family. You can see the breakdown of those fees by water and wastewater on the screen. So as John mentioned, the district uses ENR, Construction Cost Index, to annually update the fee. This year, as I'm sure you've heard, the index is higher than it has been in past years, currently at 8.4%. So I'm just going to kind of highlight the ultimate result that we have come to on that third row on the chart. The recommended fee is $16,134, and that is a 10.7% increase on the current fee. So as you can see, that's when you compare it to what the fee would be with the ENR adjustment, that's a relatively modest increase, right? So just want to highlight some of the sources of information that we use. FPC studies are kind of in between a rate study and a, you know, master plan. They take the financial piece and blend it with the engineering piece. So as you can see, it really, the list of sources that we used and the team that was involved really spanned across the whole district. Finance, engineering, water resources, everyone's been involved with this, you could really say. So I just want to highlight some of the assumptions that have changed from the 2011 study. Overall, the conceptual approach is it's about the same. We did look at a few things under the microscope and made a couple tweaks, and I'll just go down this list. So the methodology used, we used, as I said, the hybrid. At the 2011 study, it used a component-based approach. So it broke out the system into storage, into source of supply, into all the different constituent elements. We looked at a system-wide approach. We found that that better fit how the district is planning capacity going forward, and so we made that tweak to look at it more holistically. And I'll talk a little bit more detail about some of the some of what that, how that actually worked out in the details. Excuse me for a second. So the other thing I want to highlight is the system valuation methodology. In the 2011 study, it used a blend of what's called replacement cost new. So basically, you take the purchase cost of assets and bring them to present using inflation. It used a blend of that and full carrying cost, which applies a opportunity cost. At the time that that study was taking place, that was selected to better reflect the cost of capital that the district was incurring. We ultimately decided to simplify that and just use replacement cost new for all assets. We found that that simplified things, was easier to explain, and better reflected how the district is currently going about valuing assets. Source of supply allocation. In the 2011 study, it assumed that it took a sort of a layered approach to allocating source of supply. And so New Connections got the, as I'll show in a slide in a moment, it started with imported supply and then moved to desalter supply and groundwater. We basically blended that and looked at it just holistically as one water, basically. So New Connections get service from the district's many sources of supply. We are continuing the methodology of excluding contributed assets from system value, assets that are contributed by developers. Since the district didn't directly pay for those, we're continuing the practice of excluding those, so we're not double counting, double charging, if you will. The time horizon, the 2011 study used a 10-year time horizon. We are continuing that. We did look at 20-year, 30-year, and build-out time horizons for the CIP. But ultimately, as you get beyond 10 years, the uncertainty increases, and this better reflects the balance between the existing system and the future system, we believe. And then finally, we are continuing to exclude distribution and collection system CIP from the fee calculation. That's a good point to highlight that the sewer FPC includes both recycled water and sewer, so that when I say distribution, I mean water from the water FPC and recycled water from the sewer FPC. Those have been excluded. So I just want to touch on how the system has changed from the 2011 study. The last study completed in 2011, water source of supply was still very reliant on imported sources. There was increasing investment in the desalters, but by and large, imported water was a very heavy focus. The district, of course, has expanded that approach to many sources of supply over the last decade, and our fee really reflects that. And then the last study, also on wastewater, there was substantial CIP, as I'm sure you're aware. Significant expansion at the wastewater treatment plants, that was incorporated in the last fee. Those assets, of course, are now part of the existing system, and the next 10 years doesn't have quite as much expansion CIP for wastewater, but again, those are part of the existing system, so they are part of the fee. There are some projects within the next 10 years, mostly for loadings, but that big expansion that you saw 10 years ago is there's nothing like that for wastewater at the moment. And just want to highlight, when I talk about those changes, what some of those numbers are, you can see that both the water system and the wastewater system, the existing value has really increased over the last 10 years due to all the investments that the district has made. Water has much more CIP than it did 10 years ago. Wastewater CIP has actually decreased over the last 10 years, looking forward to the next 10 years. So just illustrating how the system has changed and is projected to change over the next 10 years. So the district has invested substantially in its water system, bolstering source of supply and reducing reliance on imported supply. Of course, I'm sure you're familiar with this. The district really is looking at water as a holistic source of supply, whether that's imported water, groundwater, desalter water. Some of the projects that are a part of this fee, the Paris 2 desalter, North Paris Groundwater Program and the Purified Water Replenishment Program. As you know, that has a lot of benefits for your customers. Drought resilience, lower operating costs, and, of course, a high-quality source of water that they can rely on. Those are all part of the fee for the water side. And, you know, I mentioned in the last fee that it took sort of a layered approach to allocating source of supply. So you can see on the left, the prior study approach, you know, it allocated all of the treated met water to existing connections, some of the groundwater, and then everything above that was really allocated to future connections. We've shifted that in the proposed approach, and we've really blended all those because, you know, the philosophy that we're taking in the study is that we're guaranteeing a source of water, you know, clean, safe drinking water for the district's customers when they connect, whether that comes from groundwater, desalter, what have you. And I think the bottom of this got cut off. I just want to highlight the three boxes in red, though, just to show you the calculation and the steps we took. So the buy-in total, that's the value of the existing system net of all the adjustments that we made, is currently at $1.6 billion approximately. The total system value when you add in the CIP for water over the next 10 years is $1.9 billion. When you allocate that across the projected system capacity, the fee goes to $6,845. So that is a 23% increase. Just want to just bring you back to that slide we started off with, just showing the total fee and how that fits in the context of inflation and when you add in the wastewater fee as well. Moving to wastewater, like I said, the 2011 FPC study had significant CIP for the wastewater system. Major expansions at the treatment plants, over $600 million in CIP was part of that study. That's now part of the existing system, of course. And so, you know, the overall increase in capacity that's been associated with that, as you'll see in a moment, shows a relatively modest increase in the per EDU basis, the per connection basis. And again, just highlighting the three red boxes. So the existing system is approximately $3.1 billion after the adjustments. Adding the future CIP for the next 10 years, that goes up to $3.2 billion. And when you divide that by the projected number of EDUs over the next 10 years, that fee is now $9,289. That is a 3.4% increase over the current fee. So again, just wanted to place that in the context of water and wastewater combined. It's when you blend those, it's in line with inflation. And again, just summarizing, so you can see the breakdown of those fees and how each is projected to change with the recommendations that we're making. The total fee, again, would increase by 10.7%. Just a reminder that inflation, that if the district maintained what it's done in past years and used the ENRCCI, that would be 8.4%. And it's about a $300 difference when you compare inflation with what we're recommending. Just want to highlight just briefly that, you know, in 2011, the increase at that time was over 60%. And so the district phased those increases in over a couple years. That's certainly an option, but I did just want to highlight that, you know, at the time, 10 years ago, that was a much larger increase than what we're coming with you before you today. And just coming back to this slide, how that fits in the overall inflation. You know, like I said, $341 difference between what we would recommend with inflation versus the results of the study. And just want to highlight a couple changes that this study took to increase equity and fairness in other ways. The first is a storage credit. So the district had heard from developers an interest in a storage reimbursement credit similar to what they currently get for collection and distribution mains. So we calculated what a storage reimbursement credit would be, and that is currently in our study $1,138 per EMS. So that's, you know, increasing. If a developer contributes a storage tank to the district, they would receive a credit for that investment. The other step we looked at is the required reuse area and updating the water supply development fee. So as you know, the water supply development fee is a $300 fee that is charged for all new connections, water and wastewater, just $300 for both of them. But that is charged to pay for projects in the recycled water system. It was developed a number of years ago to support that system. A recent study initiated by the district found that the projects supported by that fee would be approximately $372 per EDU for projects, for connections outside of the required reuse area. So what we're recommending going forward is charging that $372 for those areas outside the RRA. The new connections within the RRA would not pay that. So when you look at the new connections inside the RRA, that's $372, the $341. For those new connections where a lot of growth is taking place, this is essentially a not really an increase. It's kind of washed out there. And lastly, just want to touch on regional comparison. The fees as they are currently and proposed, they are just a bit above the regional average. Do want to highlight, though, that some of these agencies on the screen, they use additional assessments, whether that's tax assessments or distribution assessments, which are based on frontage. So just want to highlight that their fees are somewhat lower because of those additional assessments. It's hard to get a good benchmark for those agencies. So we did drop those out of this comparison. And so the district's FPC, both current and proposed, are closer to the regional average when you can do sort of a better apples-to-apples comparison. The regional average is $14,200, roughly, and the proposed fee is just around $16,100. So next steps, we've already had one meeting with the director of the BIA, and we have outreach meetings planned. They are in December for whoever wants to attend those from the BIA, just to kind of go through the changes. The feedback we got was positive so far. Then looking at December, we are planning to come back with the final report to deliver to you and provide staff recommendations and ask for your vote. And then this would take effect January 1, 2022. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions you have.
Any questions? Director Armstrong?
Yeah. So this study, last time it was done was 10 years ago.
Yes.
Is that sort of our practice? We would look at this. Go ahead.
I think going forward, we'd probably be looking at every 4 to 5 years. I think what we found is so much a change, and just it's a lot easier to update the fee on a more regular basis. So certainly every 3 to 5 years would be our preference going forward.
That's a good
observation.
Yep, thanks.
Other questions?
No, let me, on Director Armstrong's point, I mean, I'd like to look at some point of actually codifying that and putting that in our admin code, that there is a specific time that we always look at these, because I think we probably have gone a little too long on this particular one. And again, it's like raising rates. You want to do it gradually. I don't want to come in and have the building industry all of a sudden have a sticker shock issue. So I would love to have staff look at, could we...
And let
maybe
me
put something in the admin code that addresses that going forward.
Agreed.
We'll do that, President Pauly. We'll go back and look how we can codify that frequency. I just want to, again, just maybe highlight a couple of things that came out of the study. I think the 2.3% above ENR, I think that really underscores the value of us on an annual basis adjusting this fee so that we don't have a rate shock, as you indicated. I think that was key for us not to to be in that position. Also want to mention that in addition to the adjustment that we're recommending, and we're obviously bringing this forward today as an information on it because we do want to get the feedback from the board, make sure we're on the right path before we bring it forward for your adoption consideration. It's not just about the adjustment of the fee. It's, as Mark mentioned, there's a couple of policy considerations that we feel are more equitable to the development community. When a developer contributes storage to the district, donating those facilities, we believe it is a more equitable approach to recognize the value of that and not necessarily charge them a storage component of the connection fee. Currently, they pay the full connection fee, including the storage component, as well as donate a tank. We think there's a better approach as outlined by Mark. Same thing with the recycled water. Currently, our developers will contribute purple pipe within the track, as well as pay the $300. With the proposed approach, those that fall within the required areas for recycled water connection, which happens to be where majority of our development activity currently occurs, since they are donating purple pipe to the district, they would not be assessed the water supply development fee. So we think this is a more equitable approach overall. It's not only about adjusting the rate. I think it's calibrating our conditioning practices with development community. And to that point, when we met with Mr. Lou Monville with the BIA, he was very appreciative of the approach, of the effort, and he did not raise any concerns. We are going to be meeting with the BIA again on December 8th, not only with Lou, but with other developers that currently do work with the EMWD. So, we're very appreciative of the feedback we got from the BIA so far, and we'll continue that dialogue. But we also want to make sure we're on the same page as this board before we come forward with an action recommendation.
Yes, I had one question. So the proposed increase is just 2.7% higher than what the ENR would justify otherwise. When was the last time, or do we do it annually, raise it?
Yes.
Is it usually January?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so this is really in lieu. We haven't raised it in almost a year now.
Well, that's correct. And typically we will approach the board on an annual basis and adjust it per ENR. I do want to mention one other thing to your point, Director Slauson. We will typically, before that annual adjustment that has taken place based on ENR, we will notify developers who are working with our development services group that be aware the connection fee is going to be adjusted, and we will give them a grace period. Typically, that grace period extends till the end of January. Given the anticipated timing of this action to occur in mid-December, we would be looking at extending that grace period for developers who are working with our development services. We want to be fair. So if this fee is going up and they're in the midst of finalizing the processing for payment of the connection fee, we want to hold the 2021 fee during that grace period. So although typically it only extends until the end of January, we are looking at extending that further beyond that.
So for clarification, they actually pay, they can't prepay.
No.
It's like right prior to occupancy.
Correct.
Or thereabouts.
Correct.
Well, yeah, I support this, and I like the allocation, the adjusted allocation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's fair that you have some offsets for, you know, not double charging and they're donating. And I also think that as time goes along, you know, agencies have to evolve their method for calculating the fees, you know, so the full hybrid, I think, is good. And I also think how you're valuing the assets, you know, going forward and looking at the full cost of all those assets to replace them makes sense, too. So I think the changes that I picked up on all make sense.
I just want to make a comment, follow up on President Pauly's comment about the increase, the annual increase. And prior to 2011, I mentioned earlier, an ENR had not been applied every year, and thus probably why the 66% recommendation occurred back in 2011, and the board did phase that in over several years. But one of the things they did, you know, future-wise, was to make that adjustment every year. And that, as the results have shown, if you know, a 2.3% increase over a 10-year period is pretty phenomenal. And I think going back to your comment earlier, Director Armstrong, if we're doing this every 3 to 5 years, the adjustments that we would make beyond ENR, we would anticipate to be very, very little, hopefully.
And I think that also gives you an opportunity to capture big things that change, like President Pauly's ocean desalination plant and pipeline that's going to come here. You're going to want to get that in that calculation pretty soon.
Yeah, no, and we agree. I mean, I think we have a rolling 5-year CIP that's very aggressive. And when we did the study, I mean, we looked out all the way out to build out, which was, you know, the amount of planning we do, which was pretty amazing, but really focusing on that 10 years because that's what we know of certainty. But agreeing, looking at every 3 to 5 years will help make sure that fee is fair and equitable for all new development going forward.
I do have one more question. What happens if in the next month, the or month and a half, the increase by the ENR is another percentage higher?
You know, I think if you saw earlier, it had, we're talking over a 12-month period, right, a rolling 12 months. So I think there was it a decrease in October? I mean, I think there was a slight decrease in one of the months. So it's going to fluctuate a little.
I think, Dr. Slauson, if it increases the next reporting cycle, then simply put, that delta of 2.3 would be potentially
less,
1.3 or less. So the delta, that would not necessarily alter our recommendation, but the differential would obviously reduce possibly to 1% or even less. This is a moving consideration as far as the ENR. There's always the following year to capture changes. So I think as long as the practice continues of adjusting this based on the ENR every year, then we will be able to reconcile accordingly going forward.
Okay, great.
I think the only thing I'd add is it just shows how solid the study is. I mean, it's in line with where we're headed with ENR.
This is going to be considered before the board December.
The plan at this point is December 15th. We would come back to the board and provide feedback that we receive from the BIA, address any concerns, provide the final report for the board, and the resolution to amend the fees at that point.
Let's just make sure the BIA is aware of that meeting and invited to it.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions? All right. Thank you, guys. Very nice job. Thank you for attending our meeting today. We do appreciate it. So with that, we'll move on to item 6B, which is our strategic plan workshop number 2.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. If I can get the presentation up on the screen. As the board is aware, we have been working through an update of our triennial strategic plan for the 2022-2024 period. Want to review quickly the feedback that management has received from the board when we held our workshop on October 18th with the board members. Subsequent to that, we had a meeting with our management team and got feedback as well. And then, of course, we want to talk about next steps and timeline to adopt the new strategic plan. So as you're aware, our strategic plan is built upon our guiding principles, our mission and vision for the organization, and from there cascades into our standard of excellence and strategic priorities, which feed into specific projects that support our guiding principles and our standards of excellence. So we had our discussion with the board on October 18th, and at that meeting we reviewed our current strategic plan. But we also focused on what we saw as industry game changers. And then, of course, we reviewed the overall plan, the approach, the format, and we determined that the format of the existing plan continues to be relevant, including the mission. We've made some minor changes to the vision as well as the principles, which I'll talk about, and the standards of excellence, strategic priorities. So we've updated certain language that I'm going to cover very quickly with you this morning. So, again, the existing plan, which sunsets end of this year, provides for the standards of excellence that we've adopted that feeds into those priorities. And then, as I mentioned, then we have a list of actionable projects in support of our strategic priorities. If you recall, we currently have 47 projects, or we had 47 projects for 2019. We added 3 projects in 2020, 5 projects this year. And so total, we have 55 projects or action items. And as you're aware, these are often multi-year initiatives. So far, we've completed 25 of the 55. So 30 projects will continue on into this proposed triennial strategic plan. So industry game changers, this was the primary focus of discussion when we met with the board. As you recall, we discussed the imported water supply restrictions, the increasing intensity of climate change, consideration on social equity, environmental justice issues, especially up in Sacramento, increasing cybersecurity threats, evolving metropolitan direction, increasing cost of regulatory compliance, and I think one of the important feedback we got from the board was to include supply chain and inflation as an industry game changer, which we have done. So looking at the mission and vision, there was a concurrence that no change is needed in the mission statement. However, we have reworded the vision to remove comparison to other public or private entities and instead being recognized as a leading agency in all areas. So the new vision reads as follows: to be recognized as a leading organization in performance, technology, and advocacy, advancing innovative solutions that provide an exceptional level of customer and community service. The guiding principles, no major changes, minor wordsmithing to support some of the game changers that I just mentioned. For example, under community, we added terms of inclusivity as well as social equity. Under innovation, we added creativity, critical thinking, and part of that definition. And then transparency, we added the term easily accessible. The guiding principles remain the same. It's just incorporating some of the themes that we identified from the industry game changers. Under standards of excellence, those remain identical to previously. However, based on feedback from Director Record, the first one you'll see there, we added the word cost-effective. So before it was highly reliable water, wastewater, and recycled water service, we want to make certain we emphasize the fact that part of our standards of excellence is also to provide cost-effective service to our customers. So that change was made to our standards of excellence. So moving on to the management workshop that was held early November, we discussed the industry game changers that we had shared with the board, as well as we shared with our management team the board feedback that we had received. Overall, there was concurrence by management that these were appropriate. We also reviewed some of the definitions that we had discussed with the board. So overall, the managers had a number of questions, and we were able to address all those questions. But generally speaking, there was support for the changes that we were putting forward, as well as the strategic priorities and the operational needs and challenges identified as part of the proposed strategic plan. So under strategic priorities, again, highly reliable and cost-effective water, wastewater, recycled water service. We added climate resiliency, where before it was identified as land use resiliency. And again, that's as a result of the industry game changer that we had identified previously. Under protection of public environmental health, again, incorporating the industry game changer, we added climate change mitigation. Under superior customer service, there was actually three new items that we added, including customer-focused, technology, as well as customer advocacy. And I want to highlight that under superior customer service, with the deployment of our CSI billing system, I think that opens up a whole range of capabilities for us to engage with our customers and to be able to advance customer-focused messaging and information. So we think that's opened up a number of opportunities for us to better engage with our customers. Under sound planning and operational efficiency, as we discussed with the board, cybersecurity was added. Formerly, it was technology security. And I think we discussed that at length with Mike Malone during our workshop. And, of course, we added also physical security as a component of our planning and operational efficiency. Fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment. We added EMWD partnership. And one of the things that we discussed is we want to keep an eye on cost associated with cost of service and supplies passed on through our partner agencies. We want to make certain those are fair and equitable. And, for example, our partnership with Metropolitan, our partnership with SAPA, we want to make sure those costs, given that we are a growing region, a growing service area, we obviously want to make sure that's a priority for us as we look at our fiscal responsibility strategic priority. Exemplary employer, strategic priority, those items did not change per our discussion. Neither did the effective communication, advocacy, and partnership strategic priority. We did make, in the body of the document that is included in your board letter, we did make some minor wordsmithing within advocacy to highlight federal, state, and regional advocacy program to influence policy, legislation, regulation, and funding opportunities. So there was a minor change within the document that is included in your packet. So what are the next steps in finalizing the strategic plan document? We are currently in the process of completing that document. You have a draft that's been included in your packet. We will be conducting town hall meetings with all the employees. It will be a hybrid virtual and in-person meetings, and we have those scheduled for December, early December. And then we are developing a list of projects to be included, to be added to the 30 that will roll over into the new strategic plan. And then, of course, we'll be coming back to the board in December for consideration of adoption of the new triennial strategic plan. So this final slide shows a timeline of activities, starting with the workshop we had with the board on the 18th, the management team discussion and today's, obviously, discussion, and then the town hall meetings, and finally this process concludes with the adoption of the new plan on December 15th. So I know I went through this quickly, but I know you've seen a lot of this material before, but I did want to provide the opportunity for any further questions or comments or concerns as we finalize this document and bring it back to the board on December 15th. With that, I'd be happy to answer any question the board may have.
Any questions? Good presentation. We're on track for that. So with that, we will go to item number 7, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Second by Director Record. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. That brings us to our calendar review. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. The board has been invited to attend the Canyon Lake State of the City event, which will be held on Thursday, December 9th at 5 p.m. And the invitation is included in your packet as page 5. And this event will be held at the Canyon Lake Lodge. Moving to page 2 of the calendar review, we have the board's upcoming events and meetings for the next 2 weeks. In the interest of time, I won't go through each of these individually, but I would like to remind the board of a few items. For tomorrow's joint committee meeting with Western Municipal Water District, the start time for that meeting has been moved to 2:30 p.m. The annual poster contest judging will be held at Rancho California Water District on Friday, November 19th at 11 a.m., and currently, we have Directors Pauly and Armstrong scheduled to participate. The Aqua Fall Conference is coming up, and I've included the schedule in your packets today, just so you have the schedule at a glance. It will be held Tuesday, November 30th to Wednesday, December 1st. Several of you have registered for these events. Just to let you know, the in-person attendance is at capacity. So, but you're all registered, so you're good.
Any opportunities for scalping?
I can look into that, Director Record. On page 3 of your calendar review, we have the upcoming board meetings and committee meetings for December and January. And you'll notice a few asterisks where we've rescheduled meetings due to the upcoming Aqua Conference and holidays. And on page 4 of your report, we have the upcoming holiday schedule listed. Are there any questions or additions to the calendar at this time? Hearing none, that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Appreciate it very much. We will go to director's attendance reports. Can we start with Director Armstrong?
I attended the SoCal Natural Gas Station event, ribbon cutting, which is right here across the street from us. And that was really nice. I thought that Eastern got a lot of compliments from the gas company and their interest in seeing this happen. And that was actually one of the motivating factors, I think, for making sure that this actually did get done. And so I think that was really great in terms of partnership with stakeholders and also will allow for us to expand our fleet. So that was a good event. And deferred comp Administrative Oversight Committee. Just, I think one of the highlights from that is recognition to our staff who essentially renegotiated some of the fees from our plan administrator and investment manager there. Really, I think it dropped it by almost 25% what those fees are. Save approximately $50,000 a year going forward to our plan participants. So that was a really great job by them. And the other thing that I think is really impressive is shared the participation in our deferred comp with our employees. A little timeline back to 2013 where there was about 71% of the employees at Eastern participated in deferred comp. And now today, through the efforts of the management team and human resources to get more employees participating, it's up to 94% today, which is unheard of. And I think even our plan administrators have said, it doesn't matter where you go, 94%, you just don't see a level like that. So this is a real benefit, and it's really great to see employees participate. They'll all appreciate it one day when they retire and have that little nest egg there. So,
all right. Thank you very much. Director Corona.
Okay, on the Cahuilla Fringe Area annexation, Joe covered that pretty well, kind of long, but very, very interesting. The Murrieta-Wildomar Regional Economic Outlook, that was yesterday. That was interesting also. One of the things that was really interesting, Jamil Dada, he was there talking from the Riverside workforce. He was saying that the opportunities for employment by older members of the public are actually pretty good compared to hiring millennials. He said millennials, and I have experience in this, millennials tend to not be as reliable as the older workforce members. They will make an appointment for an interview for Thursday and then call on Tuesday and say, can I change it? Or they will make an appointment for an interview and then not show up. He said, so they're just not reliable like the older. So they're the older members of the public are really getting a fairer shake, I guess. So it was interesting. That's all I have.
All right, very good. On that note, I will note that our board secretary is millennial. I find her very reliable. So couldn't do my job without her.
Always an exception.
SoCal Gas event, as Director Armstrong noted, a great grand opening. Appreciated. We did a spectacular job out there. We had some of our vehicles out there. I mean, Eastern staff, thank you. Made the event much better when people can come and see, hey, these big trucks of ours are on the CNG system. And so kudos to whoever put that together. Great job. French Valley Town Hall. I had my annual French Valley Town Hall. Joe came out, did a spectacular job. We had one little glitch on the big screen for our presentation. Joe, you'll be happy to know that I talked to the head of the Riverside County Library System and assured them that will not happen again
next
year when we're there.
Thank you.
Happy to do that. But I think we had about 70 people there. I will tell you something, and Joe, I think you can. Some of the questions from the general public, people are in tune with what's going on out there. Even it surprises me, just some of the good questions we get about what have we done and our recycled system. So, when you get real people in a room, it's fascinating to me that our customers are pretty in tune with billing systems and all sorts of things. So,
very engaging questions, absolutely.
Yes, it was a good evening. EMD, I did a review on our presentation. Then we also met with the bonding agency. Again, I did nothing but kick it off and let the rating agency know that we take our investors here at Eastern very seriously and try and have a good financial team, which we do. And so thank you, Laura, and everybody involved with that. I was not able to attend the UCR economic forecast, although I did hear it was pretty interesting. A quarterly deferred comp, as Director Armstrong has covered, again, we do a great job with that. And you're right. I mean, our 94% participation rate is, and you know, it's part of being an exemplary employer. We are. This is a great place to work, and we're also going to help you save some bucks for retirement while doing it. So, and then the CAWEA call that was very informative, and there's probably a lot more to come on that. But always, anyone that wants to join Eastern, I want to hear what they have to say. And but there's probably some details to work out there. So, with that, to Director Slauson.
Yes, I had my monthly meeting with Joe, and he brought me up to speed on a number of issues, gave me a little more detail. And then SAPA yesterday, there was really just one item besides informational, and it was for application for a grant with DWR for the Sunny Slope Creek Native Fish Drought Response Project. So the intent is to apply for a grant to build two wells and build a water tank, and it will be beneficial for the critters and fauna or flora and other fish, Santa Ana sucker and other fish within the creek. I guess it's been dry for a number of years. That's it.
All right, Director Record.
I wasn't supposed to be here today, so I'm going to double up.
Okay. All right.
Let's look forward to that.
Okay. Very good. And we're happy to have you. With that, I understand legal counsel that there is a need for closed session.
That's correct. President Pauly and directors, there will be three items presented to the board in closed session. First one is consultation with safety risk and emergency management director, Ray American Guard Services. Another one is anticipated litigation, one case. And the third one is basically a discussion with labor representatives with regard to some direction.
Very good. We're going to do that in the closed session, or
we're
going to do it here?
We're going to stay here.
We're going to stay here? Okay. Very good. We will take about a two-minute break to switch over to closed session then.
9 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.